Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome. This is Way of the Dreamers with Robert Moss. This is the radio show, the podcast, where we affirm the power of dreams, coincidence, and imagination. I'm very excited. We have a wonderful guest today. Her name is Lauren Schneider. She has invented a practice of spiritual psychotherapy using images, and particularly tarot cards, that she calls Tarapy. It's a clever mashup of therapy and tarot. She spells a tarot with a P-Y on the end, and she has a new book out called Tarapy, It's All in the Cards. We'll get into that in a moment. Her book is crackling with wonderful stories of synchronicity, which is when the universe gets personal, which I'm guided by every day of my life. She's also a dreamer, guided by dreams. And she has one of the many merits of her approach is that she's not hesitant, she's not shy, but sharing the ways in which the methods that she offers to help other people have assisted her in life. I just love her autobiographical sequences where, for example, she talks about being a student at the Sorbonne in Paris ages ago, or not so many ages ago, and watching King Kong through a haze of Gaulois smoke while the professor discusses semiology, the science, the art of reading signs and symbols in relation to Hollywood movies. I mean, great stuff. Welcome, Lauren.
Hello, Robert. Thank you for having me.
Well, that's great. I just want to tell you, just by way of personal approach to this, well, first of all, I just pulled a card. It's sort of on the theme of this conversation from the many cards that I paint and draw from my own dreams. And what popped out, I sent it to you since we can't show it, you know, on screen right now. What popped out was one of my trickster cards, and it shows a character in a top hat who looks almost ridiculously well-dressed in old-fashioned Edwardian in a style to the waist down, where he's just wearing a pair of colorful boxer shorts, and he's riding a bicycle. What you perhaps don't see on the card is he is actually riding the bike around the big top, a circus tent. And this is a form of the trickster who has a name in my dream life, who has appeared to me many times since 1996, when I sought guidance on writing my first book on dreaming and imagination and shamanism, which was Conscious Dreaming, and he appeared as a very important guide at a hinge moment. So when I read about your adventures with a dream guide called Lawrence early on in your life, I felt an affinity. And when I read about the stranger in a bookstore who gave you his grubby, much-handled copy of the Wilhelm edition of the I Ching, I again felt a frisson, felt a chill of recognition, because the I Ching has popped out in my life. And I'm just one very quick story before we get to yours. I taught a year-long course called I Ching for Dreamers. I did basically to teach myself the I Ching. I'm not an expert because you need the Chinese language, which I don't have, to understand the ideograms deeply. But I taught a course. We did all sorts of things. We drummed the patterns of the changing lines, following the old Moeng Dui text of I Ching, where it says the sages drummed the patterns of earth and heaven into the changing lines. Anyway, one day I was getting in my car to drive downstate New York to the border of Connecticut, where we were meeting one Saturday a month. And I thought I'd just cast the I Ching with the coins, which is a simple, quick way. And the coins, I wasn't quite sure. I said, no, I don't have time, but the coins were already in motion. I didn't consciously throw them, but suddenly they started rolling. And so, okay, I followed it. I produced the hexagram. The hexagram has a number of names. One of the names for the hexagram is limping. And the advice is, basically, if you read, follow the changing lines, is slow down, take a detour if necessary. And I thought, oh, well, I better be careful with people in the class. This could be metaphorical. Handle people gently, so I could slow down, be ready to change direction in the class. The class went beautifully, all-day class. And I'm driving back, and I've forgotten about the sort of spontaneous the I Ching virtually casting itself. And I consider taking a detour from the road I'm on to drive past my old home on the farm, and I know there's no time, I'll get to the main road. And at that moment, the state trooper pulls me over for speeding. And as he writes out the ticket, he's actually really gentle about the kind of ticket he gave me, but as he writes out the ticket, I remembered, oh, the I Ching spontaneously gave me a caution which could have been taken literally to slow down or take a detour, and I forgot about it, and now I have a ticket. So there you are. That's the kind of thing that crackles throughout your book. So thank you for this book. It's really very exciting. Tell us, you know, in your own words, in your own way, how you came to this approach. And, you know, in, again, in your own words, what is this therapy?
Oh, I love you bringing in the trickster or the playfulness of a spirit muse, because that's how I came to it. I had just left film. I had no idea what I was going to be doing. That summer, I was staring into space in a New Age kind of bookstore, and as you said, a stranger handed me the I Ching, and 2 weeks later, another stranger handed me the tarot, and they both had the same words, which is, you were supposed to walk with this. So I had no idea what these divination tools were, and I also did not study them. I learned from the second man simply how to throw the coins to get a hexagram and how to pull a card. And as I looked at these images or I read the words of the I Ching, I found that something resonated with a deep inner voice in me, like a deep inner truth. And I said to myself, well, I'm going to sit on my butt for 2 months and I'll know what to do at the end of that. And at the end of that, I applied to a master's program in marriage and family psychology, and I walked into this conservative school of psychotherapy with the I Ching in one pocket and the tarot in the other. Now, I didn't go to study the tarot tradition. What I did was I was infinitely curious and playful, again, so that's that trickster. I was curious and I was playful, and I was learning a lot about psychotherapy, including hypnotherapy and psychoanalysis, and so I just began to play with, well, what would happen if I apply hypnotherapy to the cards? What would happen if I apply family systems to the cards? And I began to use the cards in session as an experiment separate from my training practice, and I would find that if somebody pulled a card in one session, we would get at exactly what the issue was, and oftentimes resolve the issue within one session, which might have taken weeks to months, sometimes years of traditional psychotherapy. So, you know, I had colleagues kind of rolling their eyes, and I thought it might be better to put down this very weird pursuit, but I was so inspired by it, and I kept having such phenomenal experiences in using it as a psychotherapy tool, that this inspiration helped me to jump over whatever fear I had, and I quickly integrated it into a psychotherapy practice, which I've been doing for 35 years, with therapy.
Well, I love your accounts of how it works. I mean, I picture, I've never been to your place, I've never been to your office, and I don't know whether it ever happened under current circumstances and the way we all live, but you describe clients coming to you and you show them 40-plus decks of tarot and tarot-like oracle cards and have them choose the decks and sometimes the actual cards that they're going to work with. And you know, you actually, and beyond that, beyond letting them choose their decks and mix and match cards from different decks if they like, you actually have them determine the placements, you know, the nature of the spread, how many cards they're going to draw, and what the places mean. And then you sometimes, or perhaps most of the time, have them actually choose the actual cards without necessarily knowing anything about it. And then it becomes a game under your guidance of people recognizing in the image the things that they have not yet been able to recognize. And because synchronicity seems to come into play, some of your accounts are very striking. I love the early story in your book in which you have a woman who's in trouble, and it turns out there's a history of severe alcoholism in her family. She's drawn a moon card, which you hadn't looked at closely, from, I think, the Karma deck. And the two towers, which appear traditionally on many moon cards, are actually wine bottles. In presence of the wine bottles under the moon with the lobster, you know, rising in the foreground, etc. Something about the ancestral story and the family problem is recognized. And in relation to that, Lauren, you write somewhere in the book that you think that it is your experience that ancestral karma is very much part of a life story and is sometimes surfaced in the fall of the cards. And you say somewhere something like, you know, ancestral spirits that are not at rest can try to suck or feed on the energy of the living. Talk a little bit about that, because there's quite a lot in your book, including from your own life, not a history of alcoholism, but a history of historical trauma and so on. Talk a little bit about how multi-generational and ancestral issues sometimes surface as you practice therapy with people.
Yeah, so, I'm a family therapist, and sometimes our lens as Western practitioners is just too narrow. You know, we have people contemplating their belly button and looking at it as if the problem is all residing within them. But in fact, what the cards start bringing up, or what our stories bring up too, is that there are ancestral patterns and that people actually reenact the ancestral pattern almost to a strange exactitude. They enact these ancestral patterns until they realize that perhaps this is something of their parents, something of their grandparents, their great-grandparents living through them. And that these patterns are going to play out until we become more conscious of them. I did share the last chapter of the book is my own work of leaning into therapy to help me get guidance and, you know, basically I was leaning in for my life to help me through a really difficult time when my mother was declining with dementia. And it had been a difficult relationship to begin with, but as I began to use the cards to guide me, the cards, I was laying out something like 9 or 16 cards, and it was like a storyboard. It was like a movie that was showing me literally how to walk through this situation for my mom. And what I began to discover is the ancestors showed up in the cards. There was a giant great tree, like a family tree, and instead of what would be the Three of Swords, where you'd have three swords piercing a heart, there were three green ghouls coming out of this family tree. And I understood that as my mother was getting closer to the portal of her own death, that these ancestors were coming through, and that they were zapping my energy, that we can be, we call it hungry ghosts, that our own life force can be depleted by these ancestral patterns or perhaps literally by ancestral spirits, energies that are coming through a portal. And it was very obvious to me that as my mom got closer to that portal, that they were coming through and that I was being guided how to keep boundaries. I was being shown how to protect myself and still care for my mother in the process. So it was very powerful.
Yes, and you tell it powerfully. And I must add, this is a beautifully illustrated book. So when Lauren talks about using the 9 cards in what I think she calls a progressive spread, you've got the 9 cards to look at. You can see the images beautifully reproduced in color. And that episode from your life, helping you both to deal with a family issue and to move forward to producing this book, actually, made me think about the old saying that to see something for what it is already to change it. I mean, it's there in La Vida Sueña, the famous play by Calderón de la Barca. It's there in the I Ching. It's there in the hexagram called Inner Truth. And you probably remember that in Philip K. Dick's marvelous novel, The Man in the High Castle, it's when that hexagram comes up and you look through the kind of portal in the image that appears. You look into the world as it might be rather than you think it is, that everything changes. This seems to be the effect of your use of tarot mirrors, to borrow a phrase from my friend Mary Greer. The cards fall, the mirror is working, you see things in it beyond your personal situation, you see into ancestral and family issues, and in the moment of recognition of how things might be in the presence of the cards, things begin to change. So it becomes a tremendous testament to the power of images, and you're very eloquent about that. I mean, we in the West, we like our images. We really do. I mean, the Western mystery tradition is one that values the treasure house of images. And your book, in that sense, I mean, is very much consonant with, very much attuned to the great tradition of the Western mysteries, which, of course, use tarot not for fortune-telling, but for self-revelation, for ritual, for memory palaces to store knowledge and access knowledge that, you know, might be made available, and as a language of the soul. So, you know, this book is exciting, and it's full of stories and full of examples of how all of this works. So give us an experiential taste, Lauren. Let me pretend I don't know anything much about this. Let me pretend I've had the good fortune to engage or get an appointment with you to do a reading in therapy, and here I am in your office. How do you introduce me to this, and how would you set it up so we could do a very simple reading?
Okay, well, it's lovely to imagine that we're able to meet back in person again. So you're sitting on the couch of my office, and we would start, I'd start by asking you what brought you in, and you would start to talk about whatever was concerning you, and we would talk about it for a little bit, and then
hold on, because we're actually going to do it, if it's okay with you. Here I am. So ask me, and I'll give you something that's on my mind.
All right, Robert, what's brought you in today? What are you thinking
about? I have a dream that I don't understand, actually. It's a small dream from last night. Would that be an appropriate thing to put to the cards, the way that you work with them?
Absolutely.
It's a very simple dream scene. I'm in a shop. It's like a store at a train station rather than airport. I'm going to a city by train, I think. And there's a pleasant girl and behind the counter. I know her a little bit. We chat. It's a little bit flirty, but nothing heavy. There's a man at the counter who tells a dream, which is interesting, a dream in which he ate something delicious. And he said the experience was divine, so I have a few words with him. And then here's the mystery bit. I have to get on the train and go to the city now. And the girl says, I'll be here this evening, drop in and bring an old altimeter, you know, something that measures altitude. Bring an altimeter. And I come out of the dream intrigued, but not understanding why I have to bring a device for measuring altitude to the next meeting. So that's the dream, and that's the mystery that I'd like to explore.
Oh, wonderful. Well, I do wish we could see the cards in front of us, but what I'm going to ask you to do now is to just sit in the dream for a moment, in all the different elements of the dream. This young woman who's asking you to bring the alternator, you might want to think about the alternator itself. This man who's eaten something divine, certainly that word may catch us. And the trip itself, the train, the travel, perhaps the destination. Did you say it had something to do with San Francisco? Or did I just imagine that?
Well, I'm staying with all of that, and the trip itself is mysterious, because although I used to take the train to New York City from upstate New York, where I live all the time, I haven't done that for a long time and don't expect to. In the dream, it's as if I do it regularly, as if I'm a commuter, so that is part of the mystery. I can see the girl to some extent, and as we talk, I can remember that she said they had an altimeter at the back of the shop and she could get one for me. So finding the altimeter is not going to be difficult, it seems, but figuring out why I need it is difficult, because the trip that I make, if it's an ordinary trip, is basically pretty much at sea level. I mean, there's no mountains to climb. So the mystery is trailing around it.
Well, there's so much that we can talk about in terms of the dream itself without adding the addition of the therapy images to it. But let's just run through the therapy process first, and then maybe we can come back to the dream, since we're not seeing images right now in front of us. What I'll ask you to do is, as you stew in these different images, in your feelings and thoughts about the dream, you take a deep breath, and when you're ready, ask yourself, how many cards do you need to look at? And what number pops into mind?
You're a bit hard to hear, Lauren. I'm not hearing all the instructions clearly. You asked me how many cards I want to work with?
Let me try again. Is that better?
Yeah, that does sound a bit better.
Okay. So take a moment as you're stewing in all the elements of the dream. Take a deep breath, and when you're ready, ask yourself, how many cards do you need to look at?
Okay. Three.
And what number comes up? Three. All right. And now take another deep breath and see in your mind's eye, how are these laid out? How would they be laid out in front of you on the table?
Right. They're laid out in a row, straight.
Okay. And now I'm going to ask you, Robert, to look at these three cards, I'm going to diagram three cards in a row before you've even picked a deck. Which of those images attract your attention first? And you're going to name each of those placements. And they may correspond to elements of the dream.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it's better.
Okay.
All right, okay. I'm going to do that. I mean, my reflex is simply to name them past, present, and future.
Okay. So now I'm going to open up my...
Lauren, we're going to have to take a short pause. And this is because we have to do that. This is a moment where I can jump up, grab an actual tarot deck, and pull three cards. So shall we...
Okay.
We have to take a pause. Shall we come back and then talk about the cards?
Wonderful.
All right. So we're talking to Lauren Schneider. She's invented a really exciting and a visually thrilling approach to therapy and self-awareness and healing, I would say, called Tarot-P, Tarot with P-Y on the end. You listen to Way of the Dream with Robert Mouse. We'll be back after the break.
Where can you find out about dreams and the dream world? MossDreams.com. At MossDreams.com, you can find out about Robert Moss, his work, and discover the way of the dreamer. Read numerous articles and essays on almost every facet of dreams. Find out Robert's class and workshop schedule. Read reviews and so much more. Visit MossDreams.com to find your way of the dreamer. That's MossDreams.com.
Robert Moss has a deep engagement with the dream world, and now you can take a crash course from this master of active dreaming at your own pace. That's right. You can get Robert's 8 exciting half-hour programs on a new DVD set called Way of the Dreamer. Share Robert's story as a dreamer and dream healer. This dynamic 3-DVD set can help teach you how to find your way through your dreams to realize your full potential. Don't wait to learn the practical dreamwork techniques that can help you understand how to attain better health, emotional stability, spiritual awareness, and more. Order Way of the Dreamer DVDs today from Amazon.com or MossDreams.com. That's MossDreams.com.
We're HealthyLife.net, reaching and helping a worldwide audience without hype, without shock, and without shenanigans.
Talking with Lauren Schneider, and we're actually demonstrating as best we can how you could use her approach to tarot to get a second opinion on a dream. I think that's what we're doing. During the pause, I grabbed a deck that Lauren most certainly knows. It used to be my old default deck. It's Aleister Crowley's Thoth deck. I'm not a fan of Mr. Crowley, but I love Lady Frieda Harris's art. Oh, I sound as if I know something about this stuff, which is not the point. Let me stop all that. So I'm holding a tarot deck in my hand, Lauren, and we've discussed the fact that I might pull three cards and lay them out in a certain order. Now, in your approach with clients, you often have them look at the cards and choose the cards. Is that right?
No, not usually. I'm going to have them take a breath and shuffle the deck and randomly choose cards.
Okay, good. That's what I'm used to doing. I just wanted clarity on that. All right. So these are those oversized cards. You absolutely cannot shuffle Las Vegas style, but you can.
Well, there's a reason for that as well. We're back to the trickster, that when you can't you can't be the perfectionist as you're shuffling these oversized cards.
I can't.
So you have to sort of let go and
anyway.
Let the child come in.
Yeah, all right. So I'm mixing the cards up a bit. Yes, okay. Carry on. I'll let you guide me.
All right. So now you're going to pick a card from anywhere you want in the deck, and you're going to place it face down for each of the placements.
Okay.
So that you'll have three cards in front of you.
Right. Okay.
And the positions as you define them, past, present, and future. Because what we're doing is we're asking you to lay your unconscious on the table in this tarot layout.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I've
all
got
right,
the cards
so turn them
in front
over.
Of me face down.
And once you turn them over, can you describe the cards that you've pulled up?
Okay, all right. First one is not a card that I like. It's the Five of Wands, which Mr. Crowley calls strife. The middle one is the Fool. And the future card is the Queen of Wands.
Wow. All right. So what's interesting is the way that you've laid them out as past, present, and future, you're really describing a journey, aren't you?
Yes.
So very much like the dream, the cards are showing you a development, an evolution that's happening.
Yep.
From strike to the Fool to the Queen.
Right.
So you might look at it in that way and say, what is this journey about that I'm on? Does that give me further guidance on this dream?
Yes.
What comes up for you?
Once again, you're hard to hear, Lauren. I don't know what's going on with the acoustics. The tricks is in play, obviously.
What, if you look at this layout of the cards like a journey in the way that the dream is describing a journey, and it's a journey that moves from strike, the Five of Wands, to the Fool, to the Queen of Wands, what do you see there as evolving?
Well, I see a movement beyond past conflict and fiery chaos, actually. It's the Five of Wands is not a card that I like. I don't like any of the five normally, although I'm always going to be attentive to what's showing in a particular card. I've chosen a deck we're both familiar with, and although I'm looking at it more closely than I have, it's a very Egyptian card. Of course, there's an Egyptian motif throughout the deck, so I suppose my mind, my fond memory goes back to Egyptian scenes because I'm one of those people who dreams of ancient Egypt a great deal and always have. So it might suggest that there is some issue of conflict going back a very, 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 very long way. We're talking about ancestral karma and the wands and the falcon and the snakes of the card are all very Egyptian themed, and the fire is chaotic. The Fool is a rather different fool from the cheery fool with his knapsack hanging off his pole and with the rider weight and so on. He's a rather crazy but powerful-looking character in this deck. I'll have to look at him more closely again. He's got an animal that isn't attacking him but seems to be, looks like a lion, seems to be rubbing himself against his leg like a friendly house cat. For me, the figure is somewhat mysterious. I mean, I have generally positive associations to the Fool. Although whenever the Fool comes up to me, I think, don't be a bloody idiot. I mean, crazy wisdom is good, but don't be a silly idiot. I look at that and I think, well, you know, beginner's mind. You know, let's stop thinking that I know everything and accept that I'm on a journey whose full nature and full destination have not yet been revealed to me. Queen of Wands I love. Here is a mature woman in her power, a power of fire, a power of inspiration, and she has a leopard. There are the big cats again. She has a leopard under her hand and a rod of power, a wand of power in her other hand. And I like her. I mean, I don't know whether she is a larger version of the girl I'm talking to at the counter in the shop, the one who has the altimeter she says I need. But it suggests to me that I'm moving towards a feminine friendship and connection and even partnership of the kind that will be very helpful and healing.
Yes, exactly. And the other thing that you're doing as you're describing the images, Robert, is that you're doing exactly what we do with therapy, which is It's not a matter of knowing what a symbol means. It's meeting the particular image that is showing up for you right now. And as I'm sitting here looking at the fool that I pulled up on my screen, he's very powerful. He is not the one that's wandering off a cliff. He's actually standing very much like the, what is that called? It's Leonardo da Vinci's man.
Oh, yes. Cosmic man, yeah.
Cosmic man,
right.
Channeling that cosmic power. He could be like the character in your dream who's eating something divine. He's pulling his nourishment from the divine. Yes, this is not your ordinary fool.
That's very interesting. I mean, I find that's very interesting. I mean, because I did ask you to show me how to use tarot cards to help with a dream, and I perhaps haven't thought enough about this stranger at the counter. And in the dream, I'm a little bit full of myself. If you're old, you know, I write books about dreams. Let's get to know each other kind of stuff. But he actually is the one who has fresh in his mind and in his mouth, because the taste is still on his palate. He's talking with high delight and excitement about the divine character, the divine flavor of the food he just ate in his dream. And I tell him, well, I think the ancients thought that the dreams in which the sense of taste and sense of smell come alive are particularly important. So we're having a good conversation, but I'm a little bit playing Mr. Know-It-All, and the fool, I think, is reminding me that the real power might come from giving up the idea that you know it all and, you know, exercising your ability to see things afresh and, you know, have some beginner's mind.
Absolutely, and because you're describing so sensually the taste that he still has in his mouth, this is where we might have you embody that taste of the divine that he still
has. And how would I do that, Lauren?
Well, you begin to sense into him and his mouth and what he's tasting. It still lingers in his mouth.
So I should maybe eat something.
You can do that as well.
I think that's a good assignment. You know, I recently had oral surgery and there were some complications, and what I'm eating at the moment is severely restricted. But I think I can shift something through that would be divine.
Well, then can I point out that having had oral surgery, this character for you, this character that's eating something divine in his mouth, maybe carrying something to heal what has happened in your mouth.
Yes.
Because, of course, there's divine
humor. That's very good indeed. All right, we have to pause for another break, but that's very helpful, Lauren. So we just demonstrate with Lauren Schneider a way of using tarot cards to get a second opinion on a dream, and in this case to move towards embodiment of the energy of dreams, which is what we always want to do. With analysis is not remotely enough. So this is Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. We'll be back to discuss other aspects of Lauren's fascinating approach to dreaming and tarot and healing after the break.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
Welcome back. This is Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. Do hop over to my website, mossdreams.com. You may see that next week I'm launching another online training for teachers of active dreaming. We've had the first one last year. We had people from Senegal to Seattle and from Brisbane to Bristol, an amazing international group of creative people. You do need some preparation for this. You do need to have done something online with me at least and read some of my books, but there's still a chance for you to join us if you're feeling the call. So that's one of the things you'll find. We've also got information on the other workshops I'm leading, mostly online at this moment. And my wonderful guest, Lauren Schneider, has a website. It's Dreams and Therapy, T-A-R-O-T-P-Y, dreamsandtherapy.com. So we were just demonstrating with Lauren how she guides people to use dreams to get a second opinion, use tarot to get a second opinion on dreams. But, of course, as a family therapist and counselor, she does all sorts of other things with tarot in the way of healing. And one of the things that I really like about her approach is that it recognizes the immense power of dreams to speak for the soul. I mean, Aristotle said that the soul speaks through dreams, and it's very much in that tradition. And her desire to help people embody the energy and potential healing of dreams rather than reduce them to desiccated semiology. Sorry, I've got to play back to the Sorbonne. Desiccated, I remember reading books on semiology when I was a kid by today's standards and trying to be French too, and even smoking Gauloise in my first visit to Paris, even though basically I don't like cigarettes. I remember those days, Lauren. So talk to us a little bit about, and you can use some examples if you like, the great examples in your book, about the different ways in which therapy assists people to recognize who they are and become more of what they can be and to heal.
Oh, well, I love the way you're describing it, so thank you so much. Well, let me say that just like dreams, the same intelligence that comes through these nightly dreams will come through the cards. So I think about therapy as dreaming with your eyes open. But even though we're randomly selecting cards, what I begin to see with therapy is that our thoughts and our beliefs and our feelings are not separate from the cards we draw in life. That somehow our psyche is shaping matter. And so you can see it in that the cards become a mirror for what's going on with somebody. This was an example of a woman who came in deeply, deeply depressed. She'd been fired from a job. She was in her 50s, had never been fired before. And as we began to talk, I understood that she also had some serious family losses. A nephew had died, people had died in her family, and that the family had not talked about it. So she was feeling quite cut off, and that was increasing her sense of depression. But we identified that grief was there in her depression as well. And so I asked her to take a breath, how many cards she needed to look at. She had two cards, one for the problem and one for the solution. And she picked the Tarot of Paris deck. So the first card that came up showed the image of a chessboard and a large Napoleon figure standing on the chessboard. And so I allow the images to simply catch my attention, knowing that there's an intuitive conduit between us when we're using these images. And I noticed the chessboard and asked if that was meaningful to her. And she said, yes, my father taught all of his children chess. And then I asked whether this dictator, Napoleon, was meaningful to her. And she said, yes, my father was a dictator. And he used to come home and start getting drunk. And then by the time we were at the dinner table, he would be criticizing all of us and telling me I was dumb and didn't know anything. And then she realized suddenly that this was the critical voice of her father that she had been carrying her whole adult life, and that that's what came out when she got fired. So she then picked a card randomly for the solution. And the card that came up was the Eiffel Tower. Well, this was a beautiful card of the Eiffel Tower, but also it had a radiant crown in the front of the image. And then it had two caduceus, the medical symbol for healing, in the upper corners of the card. And as she looked at just the images themselves, she began to feel excitement and hope that she too could heal. And this is an example of the power of images themselves to heal. This woman had been in a deep, deep depression. The doorway to her unconscious was closed because of trauma and depression. And so these images accessed the unconscious and stimulated her imagination and immediately brought hope to her. And the fact that there were the caduceus in the image and this radiant crown made her feel wonderful and hopeful and optimistic about the treatment that we were doing. And then she took the images of the cards home and she contemplated this Eiffel Tower, and she realized that it was these small connections that made up the structure, and that the connections in her life made up the structure of her life. So she began to reach out to family. She began to reach out to old bosses and thank them for their jobs, and through doing that got a much better job. She reached out to family and had deep, intimate conversations as part of her healing. And then she realized, as she looked at these small connections in the image, that she just had to take one small step at a time in different areas of her life to heal. And she did that. She changed her diet. She began to exercise. And she actually created her own healing treatment that came out of her associations with the image. But I have to say, what was extraordinary is to see somebody who's in the depths of depression, which may take, again, months to come out of in traditional therapy. The week after I saw her, it was a different woman in the room. She was elated. The images had reanimated and inspired her.
So yes, I love that. I love that narrative. And by the way, I love that deck. I tried to find it after. I was not unable to obtain a copy in my original search, but I love that Tarot of Paris, Tarot de Paris set. And the way that she used the tower, the Eiffel Tower, and the sense of the bars of the tower as being a sort of stable place from which to project herself, and the way that she took the theme of the caduceus of Hermes, the theme of the messenger to reach out under your guidance, was really quite beautiful. You have many similar stories of synchronicity at play in the fall of the cards. One of them, perhaps we don't need to go through all the details, one of them involved a woman who was both very depressed and, as I understood it, really quite negative about everything. And one of the cards that showed up in the ones that she plucked under your guidance showed a woman leaping over a hole in the earth and apparently successful in surviving the hole, but she wasn't happy about anything. And then afterwards, after you'd done some work with her, a sinkhole opened in her backyard at home, reminding us that sometimes these messages have to be taken literally.
Well, yes, sometimes these messages have to be taken literally, and in fact, I do believe that as we entertain images, we are also helping to seed our physical world and create these events. So just as a synchronicity, I just had a sinkhole open up in my backyard and immediately thought of that.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yes. We have to be very aware of the images we create in our minds, because in my experience, yes, we actually seed the physical world with these images, and they sprout.
Okay, Lauren, so now the world itself is giving you a tarot card. What does it mean to you that there's a sinkhole in your backyard, particularly since we just had the discussion about your client's experience?
Well, it led to a couple of realizations. First of all, I was very aware that I had not taken care of something. I actually had meant to get a liability insurance on my book, because I have many, many stories. I have permission to use all the stories. I have permission to use most of the images. But there are two stories I was not able to, for different reasons, to get permission. And so I did my due diligence. I changed certain details. But that sinkhole story was one of the stories that I had to change some details. And so it reminded me.
Okay, so the world told you a tarot card, and you acted on it.
I acted on it. But the other thing
we have to take another break. But that's very illuminating. All right, we're talking to Lauren Schneider. Her new book is Tarot P. That's tarot with a P-Y. It means tarot therapy. We'll be back for more after the break. This is Way of the Dreamer.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Welcome back. This is Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss. My guest, wonderful guest, is Lauren Schneider. She has so many stories to tell, and you'll find them in her book, Tarot P. Tarot P. It's all in the cards. Tarot with a P-Y. Lauren, I want to lay another of my stories on you about how the world deals with tarot cards, but actually involves both the I Ching and the tarot. As you probably know, I teach people to navigate by synchronicity. The word I coined for this is chiromancy. K-A-I-R-O, attending to kairos, moments of opportunity. And my attitude is that the world is dealing as tarot cards all the time, not just 78, but any number. Anyway, here's a quick story about things manifesting in the world involving both the I Ching and the tarot. So it comes from the period when I was leading my year-long course on I Ching for Dreamers, which, as I said, I basically put together to teach myself the I Ching. I still don't profess to be any kind of expert, but I greatly respect the oracle. And I dreamed of a lady of changes who was like the spirit of the I Ching, and actually like the consort of the great dragon emperor who gave us the trigrams according to tradition. But I'll leave all that on one side. So I'm leading one of my classes, and I'm driving back, and I come back, and I've had someone work with me on a reading, and the hexagrams, the gua, the hexagram that I derived from casting the coins. And he said, Robert, you have to focus. It's all about focus. Well, that's not very profound, but sometimes the message is simple. So I come home, and I'm walking the dog in a park, and on the ground I find a $20 bill and a $1 bill, 21. I mean, I'm happy to have the found money, and I don't feel guilty about picking it up. But I said, now I go to Tarot, 21, the universe, the world, in the major arcana, and I think, oh, it's time to manifest. It's showtime. It's time to get it out there. So because of that, I called a publisher I had never personally spoken to, and because of that and the strange synchronicity around the phone call to the editor I'd never spoken to, I had a contract within 36 hours for the book that sort of restarted my career as a dream author, the three only things, tapping the power of dreams, coincidence, and imagination. So there's the 21 on the ground, and I follow the logic of, you know, the major arcana to the editor, who immediately picks up the phone and welcomes me, and there we are.
What a wonderful story. And 21 is also biting through, the hexagram biting through.
That's good. Yeah, well, that's very good for me right now with my recent dental emergency and oral surgery. Mm. So, thank you for that. My mind actually hadn't gone back to the I Ching for that, but that's very relevant right now, Lauren. Thank you. Ouch.
What a wonderful story. Thank you.
wonderful how all of this works. As within, so without. As above, so below. And there's so much guidance available to us if we're open to it. And, of course, it does require us to keep a sense of humor and use our imaginations, as you point out. The word imagination is based on the word image, and the play of imagery is so much more important than some of us have realized in a world where often the inner child, the magical child who is a great imagineer, was suffocated and driven away by, you know, the silliness and the ignorance of the adult world. So as you do this kind of thing, I would say your inner child, your magical child, your inner imagineer comes alive again too, doesn't it?
Well, that's actually why I practice therapy, and I invite that in the people who come in to do therapy with me, which is that when I'm doing therapy, as opposed to doing psychotherapy, which can bring in my very overly responsible adult and have me feeling responsible to fix somebody, when I'm doing therapy, my magical child is completely integrated with the sage or higher self. And so that's both playful and reverent, and I don't feel like I have to fix somebody. I know that we're inviting that magic of spirit into the room and into the process, and also inviting their magical child to come into their healing. So it's a way of accessing, as we do with dreams, somebody's deep inner wisdom, and then as you described in that wonderful story of picking up the $21, it invites spirit. And our original medicine, the roots of our medicine, go back to prayer to the gods for the healing. But our current medicine has forgotten that, that it is something divine that also enters in, either through us or our unconscious, or a universal intelligence that's being brought into play in the process of healing.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. And as I sit here in my desk, I wish you could actually see it. I mean, it would terrify some people because of the absolute apparent chaos of books and papers. But in addition to the chaos of books and papers, there are toy soldiers. There's a wizard standing on a crystal mountain. There's a plush stuffed toy lion and a plush stuffed toy falcon. There's a lion, a miniature lion woman from Thailand. There's a goddess figure. There's a miniature Horus. There's a miniature Rolls Royce. There's a bunch of marbles. I mean, why? What is all this stuff doing here? Well, it's to reassure, I hope, my boy Roberts that I'm not lost to them completely. But I'm prepared to play games and play with images that they enjoy. And, of course, there are also paints and pencils and crayons and watercolors and watercolor brushes in a dirty glass right next to me as I talk to you, because my little boys really become alive when I play artist again and try to sketch or paint spontaneously some images that are with me, which is why I spend so much time and have so much fun drawing pictures from my dreams.
Yeah, and it is that very creative, playful act that actually engages our life force. So as you're talking, I'm thinking about how the fool, how your trickster was pulled, or how the fool was pulled, and how much that creative, magical, playful being is part of this conversation.
I dreamed once when I was leading a course on Tarot for Dreamers, which I've also done. I did a year-long course and a bunch of weekend workshops. We journeyed into the cards. We used those portal images. We dialogued with characters from the cards, etc. But I dreamed the first night of one of these classes that the fool had arrived at the place where I was teaching. And inside his knapsack, inside his pouch, he had all the powers of the world. You know, they were all there inside his sack. Which is, of course, the way that some people read the tarot. The mystical writer Charles Williams, in his book The Greater Trumps, depicted the fool someone like that. So, again, coming rounding back, circling back, looping back to the cards I drew at your, with your prompting and your guidance, the fool is at the center of everything once again. Mystery of the fool. Yeah. All right, Karen, it's Lauren. Why do I keep calling you Karen? Is there a Karen who's important in your life?
Not that I'm thinking of, but there is a Karen that I have thought about reaching out to. And
one of the ways that I read what's going on is when I make a habit of calling someone by the wrong name, and I know perfectly well what their name is, and there's no obvious reason why I'm thinking about the other person, I always ask, is this person of relevance to you? Is this someone you recognize and someone who might turn up? I remember once in one of my workshops, I had a man whose name was, say, Charles, and I knew perfectly well his name was Charles. I kept calling him Bill. It was quite different. And finally, I turned to him and said, who is Bill? He said, oh, Bill. He burst into tears. He said, Bill was my partner. He died 6 months ago. I'm wearing his sweater. You know? So the different ways we know things aren't there. Yeah.
I'll take Karen as a prompting to get a hold of this person. Thank you.
I'll be curious. There are so many ways that we know things we don't bleep that we know. I mean, and that's another one, too. You're in the presence of someone else or some situation. Something arises, something comes to your mind that is otherwise inexplicable, but it's part of your knowing coming from a place beyond the conscious mind. And your approach takes us beyond the limits of the conscious mind. It brings more into consciousness. It fulfills Jung's injunction that we must make more of the unconscious conscious, and it does it in a way that is fun and frisky, and that anybody actually can do, because you point out you don't need to be an expert to do this. You don't even need an expert to guide you, because at the end of the day, the role of the guide or the therapist is going to be to help you open your eyes to your own truth, right?
Yes, exactly. And the cards, this therapy becomes a very personal practice. So I teach all my clients how to do therapy for themselves, how to do the I Ching for themselves, so that they have a guide throughout their life and they don't have to stay in therapy forever. And then, of course, I do teach workshops so that they can keep practicing.
It's so important to give people their own power rather than taking it away from them. And I notice that you get people, as all of us do, who really want you to give them the answers and tell you, and they want you to tell them what it means and how to live. And you seem to decline to do that, which is what real guides and real therapists must do. We must help people claim their own power and be authors of meaning for their own dreams and their own lives. And you do that. Well, we've had a wonderful conversation with Lauren Schneider. Once again, her website is Dreams and Therapy, T-R-O, Tarot with P-Y-N-N.com. We'll be back in a moment basically to say thank you and dream on. This is Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
What a pleasure to share this conversation with you. And even though we didn't have visuals and we're not in the same space, you know, spreading the cards and listening to your account of the role of images made it very tactile, very real. It was delicious. Thank you.
Thank you. I feel so honored and delighted to talk to you, Robert.
Well, I think the book is going to have a very enthusiastic readership, and I recommend that people use it and play with the tarot and their dreams as you advise. All right, that's it for now. let's go forward in good health and good spirits. May your best dreams come true, and may you remember them.